Welcome to The Pew, the place where everyday guys talk about everyday things in front of the one person who can do something about it, Jesus Christ. Now here's your host, just a guy in the pew, John Edwards.
Well, welcome back to The Pew, everybody. I am your host, John Edwards, and here across the table from me, as always, is my co-host and cohort, Victor Adams.
John, I mean, you know, you kind of told me what you're going to be talking about today, and it was pretty exciting because I think this is a topic that a lot of us need to kind of grasp and realize that even though days may bring us, you know, discomfort, or frustration in the circles of our relationships, you know, whether it's family, whether it's work or friends, every day is going to bring some kind of like a frustration, but it, more importantly, is how we deal with it.
Sure.
And how we view it. And the great thing about, you know, learning about things is like, how do we respond to those things that irritate us?
Yeah. Well, and that's the thing. Talking about irritations, I don't know that, you know, there's anything that more people are probably irritated at more commonly or more often than work.
Yeah.
You know, so many times we can look at work as nothing but a burden to us. And so, yeah, we're going to be talking about that today. It's something that, you know, I don't know that we've talked about work stress before. We've talked about different aspects of, you know, providing for families and things like that as part of what, you know, what a man has to do, but and women have to do. But today we're going to talk about it in a little different life. Like, what is the purpose of work? And, you know, we talk a lot, Victor, about finding the will of God, you know, and surrendering that total abandonment to the will of God. Well, that's in everything. It's not just this and not that. You know, we don't get to pick where we want to, you know, play a part in God's will. You either surrender all of it or you don't. And that's certainly in our jobs, too. So we're going to start talking about all that in just a minute. But first, I just wanted to say this weekend, remind everybody, if you're in Minnesota, I'm heading your way to St. Anastasia Catholic Community in Hutchinson, Minnesota. So we're going to be doing a Restored Parish Mission and Men's Group launch up there. It's open to men and women. So if you're in the Minneapolis, St. Paul area, it's about an hour, I think, to the west of there where we're going to be in Hutchinson. So come out and see us. We always love to meet people that listen and have been following the show. And I know we've got a lot of followers up there. So please come and join us. I'd love to meet you for that and enjoy the mission and bring those that you know. We're going to be starting an amazing men's group up there. So if you're a guy and you live near there, then there's a group you can join and find a place to be in community and grow in your faith alongside other men. So that's coming up this coming weekend, May 3rd and 4th. I also want to say thank you to those who have been supporting us. As we've talked more about the need for people to become monthly partners in the pew, you guys are responding. We picked up 3, 4, 5 more people this week that are just giving generously, you know, and saying, hey, this is what I can give, but I'm happy to do it, you know, and I hope that you guys will take it and use it in the things that you've talked about. And those things are growing our support team, helping to bring more things into the ministry that we need to be able to do the work that we need to do. There's so much stuff that comes up each and every day that we know we look at and go, ooh, we wish we could have that, or ooh, we really need that. But it's always a question of whether you could afford it, right? And afford people to be able to continue to move the mission forward, right? We're getting to the point now where there's so much demand for what we're doing that I can't do it myself. So we've got to bring on other people to help me with that, missionaries that we could train and send out. So those are all things we have in our plans. But like any other thing, you know, I hate to talk about ministry like a regular, you know, secular thing, but it all takes money. You know, at the end of the day, it all takes resources to run and to keep going in order to stay in pace and in the direction that the Lord wants us to move, that we've really been praying through and discerning. So for all of you that have given, thank you. For any of you that would consider it, your support matters, whether it's $5 or $1 or $10, $25, whatever it is, it all counts, it all adds up, it all helps. So if you would like to support us, if you haven't yet, you can become a monthly partner in the pew by going to justaguyinthepew.com. Up in the top right corner, there's the donate button right there. You can click that. You can go in and fill out, you know, give whatever it is that you want to give. You can also give annually or one time, whatever you guys want to do. But that's the quickest and easiest way to support us. Again, you know, I shared some stories last weekend about people going to confession for the first time in 40 years. We get emails all the time from guys whose families and their lives are changing because they've been listening to the show or they've been in person in a mission, or they're in a group now that we've started. So help us to continue to do that, because until the men of the church are changed, we're going to wind up in the same situation we're in. That's why we pour our time and our efforts into serving the men, because in the end, the men will serve their families and the church in the way that God called them to do. So you can go to our website at justaguyinthepew.com. And up there in the top right corner is a donate button. That's the quickest and easiest way. And then I'd say for anybody who wants to start a group, go to our webpage there again, justaguyinthepew.com. And there in the middle of the page, you'll see buttons that say Start a Men's Ministry, Launch a Men's Ministry, Find Out More. Click one of those, fill out the form, get on a call with us, and we can help you start one in your parish too. So thanks for listening to that, folks. Victor, we're going to jump into the episode now, and we've already talked a little bit about it here in the beginning. The title of this episode is going to be We'll Work for Sanctity. Mm-hmm. You know, you always see people that say we'll work for food signs and things like that. But our job as we work, as in anything else, is for sanctity, mm-hmm. right, in our jobs. And, you know, I've been reading this wonderful book. It's called He Leadeth Me by Father Chizik. He is very popular right now due to some things on Hallow, and Father Mike Schmitz did some series on him, I think, and then Matthew Leonard's video series that we've been using in our group uses a lot of quotes from him, because he's always speaking about the total abandonment to the will of God. And so that's been sort of a theme here lately in our podcast and through the last few episodes. And as I started reading further in the book, there's a chapter on work.
Yeah.
And it just made me realize, I was like, man, this is so good, because it's not just about doing God's will and the other things, but how do we do it in our jobs and see them as ordained by God for us? And wherever we are in the time and what we're doing it for work right now in our lives, that's been ordained by God, right? I mean, he's put us in those positions, or allowed us to be in those positions, for certain reasons, right? Now, we may not know all those reasons, but so many of us, we look at work as nothing more than a burden, mm-hmm. right? We look at it as, oh, we hate it. You know, we wind up dreading Sunday nights. We wind up, you know, griping the entire time about what we're doing. We come home, a lot of us, and we bitch and moan, you know, excuse my French, but we do, about how terrible work was, or how much of a trial it was, or how much we hate it. And, you know, it never really occurred to me that it could almost be like spitting in the face of God a little bit, because he's giving you that gift, and it may not seem like a gift at the time that you're in, mm-hmm. right? There's seasons for everything where work is a blast and it's fun, and there's times where it's not, right? Right. I mean, I imagine if you're an accountant, you like doing that for, you know, probably 8 months out of the year, and then there's four that you really probably don't care for it when you get around tax season and all that stuff. So we all have different things in our jobs that we despise or that we don't like. Even in ministry, there's things that you can find mundane or burdensome or boring or just monotonous, and you know, it can turn your mind away from the gift that work can be. So through this book, you know, it really, there's some things that Father Chizik, and we'll talk about his story and all that stuff and share some quotes from the book on his thoughts with work and how he came to understand this work as a vital part of living in the will of God, even through some of the most terrible conditions and things that he was having to do. But I really wanted to start off here today, Victor, just talking about how so many of us see work as a burden, and how we just, a lot of times we lose the gift that work really is, not only to provide for our families, but to live in the will of God. And when we do that, we're really missing out on a tremendous gift.
Well, you know, a lot of us, when we think of work, we think it's everything I do. I can do this, I do this, I do this.
Yeah.
So when we depend upon ourselves, we're going to be exhausted. We're going to use so much of our own energy to complete what we need to do, or to meet the needs, right? But, like, I think what we'll talk about this book is, like, changing that around to say, where be fully dependent on God to do your work, to set about your work. To not, like, have those false expectations that you're going to do all this and all these things are going to happen in the right way, because it doesn't really happen that way. There's always an email, or there's always a report, or there's always something that messes up your day.
Yeah.
And then it's how you react to that. And can I tell a quick story?
Sure, yeah.
All right, you know.
Of course.
So, you know, when it comes to, when I'm talking about the fully trusting God, okay, that is when everything that you control is removed.
Yeah.
Okay. So, like, for him, you know, I know we're getting into this, everything that he could control was removed from him.
Yeah.
Because he was being told what to do, or he was being led by someone to tell him what to do. The only aspect in my life that I can compare to what that means to be total abandonment, total trust, and the inability to control the environment I was in was when I went to South Africa to do missionary work. And we were with the group. I know I told you this, and probably people who were in the early days probably remember the story.
Sure.
And I try not to repeat much stuff.
That's
but, you
okay.
know. But anyways, we were there in Cape Town, and this is a township called Guguletu. And we were working with the church there and really doing some stuff there that was pretty profound for the community there. The large group I was with were mostly adults. It was myself and two other guys who were college-age kids. And the rest of the group said they're going to go to like another conference. Would you guys like to stay here and hang out with the kids and help their homework and do whatever? They're like, yeah, sure, we'll do that. Help them teach English. So anyways, they went. And then next thing I know, the pastor there, named Spiwo, came and said, hey, I want you guys to go to this other center that we work with this church. You need to follow this guy, who happened to be Spiwo too. I guess it's like John. It's a very popular name over there. So we're like, I just met this guy. Me and two other guys just met this guy. I was like kind of the oldest guy of the group. So the anxiety started to build. I'm like, so where are we going? We get a car. He's like, no, we're walking. So we're walking in a township. And if you know the history of South Africa, you know the Afrikaners and the native individuals, people didn't get along for a long time. It was apartheid, mm-hmm. right? So you become an image of past frustrations from those that were once in bondage from the white population.
Yeah.
Okay. So we are walking from like in the middle of the market, like you just, there's like millions of people around, and we stuck out like, you know, as we would be.
Yeah.
And the other two guys were just kind of walking around. I was like trying to keep them close together because, you know, you don't know.
Yeah.
You don't know. And I was getting to a point where I was so like overworked and frustrated, like angry, and like, why did they put this in a situation? And all of a sudden I heard the spirit say, let go.
Yeah.
Just let go. And so instead of like being fearful, instead of being upset, instead of like being on protective mode, I said, God, I'm here. Let me experience it. And we walked for a while. I mean, it was like a 30-minute walk, you know?
Yeah.
And I could have been fearful. I could have been like resentful and all that stuff when I got there. So why'd you let us do this? But what I did is I let go. Whatever was going to happen was going to happen. And then when I started doing that, I started saying hello to people, you know, in conversation with people, like really smiling and putting myself in the situation. Now, I didn't know where we're going. So,
sure.
You know, I didn't know what Northwest, I didn't know any directional, like other than the sun was in the middle of the sky. So there's no way for me to go back to where I came from or to know where I was going. All I knew was just following this guy who I just met 15 minutes.
Sure.
You know, so I just said a prayer and I said, I'm going to experience what you have me to experience. And when that happened, peace came over. And I said that long drawn out sentence of that story because I think we miss that a lot in our lives in a day to day basis because we're so used to our routine that we don't let God take control of the day because I got this, God. I've done this 100 times. I know what to do. I'm going to do it the way I want to do it. And then we have a day full of frustration because you don't give the whole day over to him.
Right. Well, we don't look at it as a way to honor him.
Right.
I mean, you were there to work, and he called you somewhere that wasn't comfortable for you and all those things. And yet in that, you found a gift. Mm-hmm. I mean, through the nervousness, the fear, the anxiety, all those things. And a lot of times we put that, to your point, we put that on ourselves because we're trying to do it ourselves, mm-hmm. right? Like we think that I'm the one that's got to get this reported. I'm the one that's got to this. I got to. And yes, while that's true, everything we should do should be in partnership with God. And, you know, so we have to get past this point of like looking forward to the day like when it's all over. Because I hear that mm-hmm. people say that too. You know, they're like in their 30s. You know, no offense to anybody in their 30s. They're like, I can't wait to retire. And it's
right.
like, you've been working like maybe 10 years, you know? Like,
what?
There's a lot longer to go. And gosh, you know, it's a gift to work. It's a gift to be able to get out there and to use your mind and your body and all those things to do different things. But so many people, we do that in our lives. We look past a gift for some future gift
mm-hmm.
we think it's going to be. But how many people do you hear when they retire, when they sit down, their health declines, right? They give up. A lot of them die, right? When they stop having something to do, you just die. A lot of people, and there's just a lot of people can't sit around. Like my father struggled with it so much because he worked so much. And for him to just sit around and have nothing to do, you could see him like eating at him, mm-hmm. right? So we could spend our life like dreading something and hating something and waiting for it to be over. But we don't know what it's actually going to be like when it's over either. And so many people, we do that and we miss that gift. And then, you know, when we look at things that way, we just miss so much. I mean, we really need to reframe what work is and the gift that it is, Victor, because when we don't, we miss so much and it becomes something it's not supposed to be.
Right.
Right. And what I mean by that is, like, before the fall, you know, work was good. Adam loved the work. Like, God put him in the garden to till and to keep it, right? It wasn't this sweat of the brow, burdensome, you know, thing that became a source of inadequacy for men and all those things. Work was an opportunity to work alongside his friend and God, right? And to cooperate in the creation that God had made. And then after the fall, work becomes something different, right? It becomes a toiling, a stressful thing instead of just a companionship in a work with God. And that's where so many of us have allowed ourselves to get. And that's why we have to reframe this. And I love this book because, for those of you who don't know, Father Chizik was a priest that was over in Europe, and he had been dreaming of going to Russia for years. He knew Russian, spoke Russian, all that stuff, wanted to go over there and serve the church. And then the war happened, and people were they were overrun in Poland or wherever he was there, to be taken over to Russia for work and all this stuff. So he and a couple other priests disguised themselves, you know, did not take anything that would really tip them off as being priests, and went in there, and they were going to kind of undercover serve people there. Well, word got around, and it turned out when they got over there, you know, it was a communist. So a lot of people they thought would be glad that they were there weren't, because popes were speaking out about the communist church, and so they love communism more than they did the church, so they would turn in these priests. So eventually he found out he was a priest, and they take him to this sort of solitary, nicer confinement in Moscow, where they interrogate him forever, and finally he won't agree with them to be a spy. They want him to be a spy in the Vatican. He says no. After he had signed something to say yes, he went back on it and said, I won't do it. So he sent him to, like, the mines of Siberia, which is freezing cold, and it's manual labor, building towns, digging mines.
Most people don't come back after
that. All of that stuff. And the thing was, when he was first in these little rooms, he was by himself, and he longed for company, you know, because that was the torture part for him, was being by himself and trying to keep his mind up and all those things. But then he gets on this train, and it's like full of nothing but straight up criminals, like the worst of the worst, that are just beating people to a pulp and killing them for their clothes, all this stuff. And so now he's really got to abandon himself to the will of God even more than he did in there. But he gets to these mines, and he starts to survive, but there's barely any food. They give you enough to be able to have enough energy to work. But he starts realizing that this grinding work, like axe picking frozen ground to dig mines, building factories and places to be able to up towns and townships up there for life to come up that way, it was excruciating. He talked about how many times his fingers felt like they were just going to rot off from the freezing cold. He talked about being out there with blistered hands and even waking up some days and not even being able to move, like physically having to will himself to get out of the bed because his back and his muscles were so torn and hurting from all this work that he wasn't accustomed to, and of course didn't have the nourishment to do. So he goes to talk about all this and how many people would just complain in the room about the work and the gruelingness of it and the punishing parts of it, and how all of a sudden he started to see that even this was the will of God for his life. That, like, I could complain and I could gripe and I could moan about all this, the physical troubles of it, the mental troubles of it, the exhaustion, the lack of sleep, the hunger, or I could simply go, I cannot change my situation, and God has put me in this situation. Therefore, I can look at it from his point of view. So he starts to say this. He says, I did each job as best I could. I worked to the limit of my strength each day and did as much as my health and endurance under the circumstances made possible. Why? Because I saw this work as the will of God for me. I didn't build a new city in Siberia because Joseph Stalin or Nikita Khrushchev wanted it, but because God wanted it. The labor I did was not a punishment, but a way of working out my salvation in fear and trembling. Work was not a curse, but a way to God, and perhaps even a way to help others to God. I could not, therefore, look upon this work as degrading. It was, in fact, ennobling, for it came to me from the hand of God himself. It was his will for me. Now, here's a guy in a Siberian freaking prison camp. in the worst conditions you could possibly imagine. And he's been in prison now for like 4 or 5 years. He winds up being in prison for like 23. And he's going through this, and all of a sudden he starts to see this work not only as a means to glorify God, but also it's allowing him to get to know people and then to minister to them. He goes and he talks about how they would sneak away and have masses, how he would hear confessions as they were working side by side, and how all of a sudden he started to serve the people there. Mm-hmm. You know, and I look at it like the way that I've thought about my life with work and the way I've griped and moaned and complained about the most mundane things as I sat in an air-conditioned car and complained about, oh, someone yelled at me, or oh, something didn't go my way today, or all these things. And I looked at it in the wrong light. You know, and he continues to talk about this. He talked about how some of the communists there, their mode of seeing through it was pride in what they were doing, working together in the communist way to build more for their country. But he says this, he goes, the difference for me lay in the motivation. He said, as a Christian, I could share in their concern for building a better world. I could work as hard as they did for the common good. The people who would benefit from my labors would be just that, people, human beings, families in need of shelter against the Arctic weather of Siberia, or people in far-off places elsewhere who would have a better life because of the natural resources I had helped to liberate from the frozen ground beneath me, or because of the materials that the factories I helped build would someday produce. I could justify, therefore, my cooperation in this work for the good of all mankind if it came to that. But there was more to it than that. There was the realization that work of itself was not a curse, but a sharing in God's own work of creation, a redemptive and redeeming act, noble of itself and worthy of the best in man, even as it was worthy of God himself. Right, so a couple of things there. He's talking about, like, yeah, I could concentrate on doing it for the greater good. Mm-hmm. But what I chose to look at was everything I did, no matter how mundane and burdensome and boring or painful it was, I knew went to help other people in some way. Resources that would go around the world to give people a better life, towns and buildings to keep people out of the cold. All the other things that he mentioned there was an opportunity to serve others. And then he says something interesting. He said, it's not a curse, but a sharing in the work of creation, which is what work was intended to be before the fall, right? This is what God invited Adam into, was to work and to till it. You didn't hear any words in there of the groaning or moaning or even making work sound like work, right? It was just a joy to be called to serve and to work alongside the Creator. And then he even goes on to say it was worthy for even God himself, which we're gonna get into a little of that in a minute. But Victor, I mean, your thoughts on those quotes and what he's talking about there. I want to hear what you think about that.
An issue that came to me is that, you know, all of us who work within, like, say, in the service industry,
yeah,
you know, like marketing, your accounting or something, you're doing something for somebody or company or entity, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, the focus I think we need to kind of assess is that we are here to help somebody or something or company or individuals.
Yeah.
So if we put our heart to helping this person, you know, or getting the best we can give to these individuals, like for instance, you know, me, I'm the connective tissue for people needing behavioral health help or addiction help. So I can tell them to focus on, you know, on many places they go, not just my facility that I work with, because I know other places may have certain gifts or certain insurance, whatever they take, and so I know that. So I'm not beholden only to me. I'm also finding, giving them the best care that they need, and that's what we're saying for everyone who is in a work field that may have pressure to do things or may feel pressure from people. You have to remember these people are in dire need for something. Their help. They're something going on.
Yeah.
Right. And it's same thing for you. They, like their machine shop. Their part broke and they need a part.
Yeah.
You told me this before. Like someone needs, say, a blower on their car. You know, to because it's hot and they yeah. you know they have a you know they have an older parent that needs heat. You know needs air. So or like an alternator to get them to go to work.
Sure.
You know?
Yeah.
So I'm like, if we don't take the time to like get this as fast to them as they can, pull the part, whatever, to get to,
yeah.
you know, and if I'm stealing your thunder,
no, it's
your story,
okay. No, it's
but,
okay.
But this is what you told me in the past, yeah. is that, you know, when you work for other people first and your work is involved in making people's lives better, then you're doing God's will. You're
yeah.
helping your neighbor. You're making their life, you're being more impactful. You're helping them to get where they need to get to.
Yeah, well, and that's the thing. I mean, that's what we're really getting at. You have to eventually, the places we get to where we struggle in work is where we start to think only of self. Mm-hmm. This is, I don't want to do this. I don't want to give the time. This is not what I signed up for. And that's what he talks about in a previous chapter in the book, as he says, I realized the problem in my life was the word I, mm-hmm. right? Because I was trying to say I was surrendered to God's will, but I really wasn't. I was worried about me and my comfort and all these different things he talks about in there. And that's the way it is for us too. We can lose the glory of work when it becomes all about us, like in our discomforts and the things that we don't like and the way things don't fall our way, or maybe we didn't get the promotion we wanted and we worked so hard to get it. Whatever it is, when we get so caught up in that, we miss the reason of anything else, and we're not doing our God's will, we're doing ours. And it's important in everything. I mean, St. Elizabeth Ann Seton, another saint, says, the first end I propose in our daily work is to do the will of God. Secondly, to do it in the manner he wills it. And thirdly, to do it because it's his will. Mm-hmm. And what happens is when we struggle with our jobs and our work and things like that, it's because we're wrestling with God. Like, we're wrestling to try to control it, like we're trying to control everything else. And we look at it and we simply miss, like, Lord, thank you that I had an opportunity to go somewhere and to make a wage today to be able to support my family, first and foremost. Second of all, Lord, thank you for the opportunity to get out of myself and know that something I did, even though I may not be in the direct interaction of where it winds up, is going to benefit or help somebody else. And you're absolutely right. Mm-hmm. That was something I struggled with when I worked at Napa. You know, when I was young and started, I was working in the warehouse, and the one that used to be in downtown Memphis, the air conditioner would like run out of Freon about a week into the summer, and they wouldn't refill it because, you know, it would just keep running out all summer. It'd be 120 degrees in there. I mean, it's hot as, you know, mm-hmm. people would fall out in there. And I'm walking through there, sweating, you know, all the stuff that men get when they sweat, the irritations everywhere, right, all that stuff, like hating my job. Back then, I was drinking and partying every night, so I'm sweating out all the booze and feeling even worse and all that stuff. But as I'm going through there, like, it just, I would complain and complain and just, and it was all about me. But as I got older and we moved to that new warehouse that was out there in East Memphis, where it is now, like, I got moved up to pulling parts instead of just stocking. And you know, I would notice, like, I started to look at it differently. I started to go, well, man, I don't want to walk all the way back down. Like, I'd walk 20 miles in a day, basically, almost up and down this huge 11,000 square foot warehouse, pulling part by part, by shelf for stores and whatever. And there would be a tendency to go, like, well, I don't want to feel like walking all the way back down there, so I'll just zero that out, like showing we don't have it and they're not going to get it. And then I would tell myself, I'm like, no, I can't do that because somebody's waiting for that, mm-hmm. right? Like, somebody's in some small town somewhere that's praying that that part comes tomorrow and that their mechanic can put it on that car so that they can get to the job that they need to get to, because maybe they're a single mother and that's the only way they can provide for their work. Or maybe, like you said, it's somebody's elderly person that needs that air conditioning compressor because it's so hot they can't drive their car without it. I mean, there's so many things like that. And I would see so many people I worked with, you know, they would give into those things. I'd see them zero stuff out, and it would return and go to my gun. And I used to sit there because we had scan guns, right? So if somebody zeroed something out because they didn't want to, they were lazy, they were about to leave in 3 minutes, and they wanted to go spend the rest mm-hmm. of the time at work in the bathroom or something, you know, to hide until it was time to go, they would zero it out, and it would go to my gun. And I'd sit there and go, really, God, like, it's my time to go too, right? Mm-hmm. But then something would hit me to go, look at this. Like, you've got an opportunity to ensure somebody gets something they need.
Right.
Right? It's not about you, John. And yeah, your legs hurt and your back hurt and you're tired and you're ready to get the heck out of here. But it's not about you. Mm-hmm. You know, even when I was a sales guy, you know, there were parts of my job I hated, all the quotas and the numbers and the never ending, okay, good job, you know, on the 31st, and then enjoy it for 3 hours. And then for the next 30 days of your life, it's a living hell trying to make that number again. And if you don't, we're going to yell at you. And if your store managers and the people that work in the store don't get it right, the customers are going to yell at you. That part was a part of my job that I hated. Like, I hated all the pressure and all that stuff. But what made me continue to do it was, at the end of the day, I knew that those shop owners, mm-hmm. their businesses were becoming better because of my willingness to go the extra mile for mm-hmm. them. And their families are taken care of. And not only their families now, but generationally, their families would be taken care of. And those people that were entrusting them with their vehicles that they'd given their word to, they could now be good on their word because I saw to it that the things that we said we were going to do were going to happen.
Right.
And so that's what work is about, is getting out of yourself. I mean, no matter what, I'm sure people that collect trash every day probably are like, this stinks and I hate this job and this smells and look at all this stuff that people are throwing away that you know, I could have used or whatever. But at the end of the day, those people still have to get up every day and find some way to glorify God through that. If you don't, then you're just going to live in a miserable existence. And you get in this place where you think you're too good for it, mm-hmm. right? Where we go like, I'm better than work. I don't need to, this is beneath me. And so many people I hear say that, like, I've got this degree or I've got this. And maybe it didn't work out to be in those fields where you were, but if you get to that place where you think things are beneath you, you need to wake up. Because even the God of the universe decided he needed to work for 30 years before he ever came onto the scene, right? Jesus Christ, as God, chose not to come down here in some caravan of things and great riches and be born a prince who never had to work, even though he was the prince of princes and the prince of peace. He chose instead to be born in a humble carpenter's shop, where he spent 20 years of his life doing grueling work. And you know, a lot of times they talk about he was a carpenter, but look, there it was Teton, right? It was a lot of things they worked on. Mm-hmm. Stone, metal, things like that that they were able to. So it wasn't just wood. He worked on all sorts of things, is what historians would tell us. But he spent every single day, knowing he was the Son of God and having power at his hands, mm-hmm. and he still sat there and moved into the mundane. And saw that it was not beneath him as God. He became one of us and experienced the same things that we did. The difference was he offered all of that up to God, right? He never allowed it to get to a woe is me area or anything like that that we know of. He sat there and he did what his Father put him here to do, and he did it to glorify him. And Father Chizik talks about how he understood that about Christ too. He goes on to say in another part of the book, says he worked day in and day out for some 20 years to set us an example. He's talking about Jesus here. To show us that these routine chores, too, are not beneath man's dignity or even God's dignity. The simple household task and the repetitious work of the wage earner are not necessary evils, but noble and redemptive works worthy of God himself. Work cannot be a curse if God himself undertook it. To eat one's bread in the sweat of one's brow is to do nothing more or less than Christ himself did, and he did it for a reason. He did it for years on end. He did it for more than three quarters of his life on earth to convince us that God had not asked of us anything more tedious, more tiring, more routine and humdrum, more unspectacular than God himself has done. He did it to plain to us that the plainest and dullest of jobs is, or at any rate can be, if viewed properly in respect to God and eternity, a sharing in the divine work of creation and redemption, a daily opportunity to coordinate with God in the central acts of his covenant of salvation. I mean, this is the thing. I mean, this is where we all have to get with work, mm-hmm. is to understand it's a gift. It's not a punishment. It's not a burden. It's not just a means to take care of your family. It's a means in which to enrich the lives of others. So think how many places, I know some of you may go, well, no, we're not supposed to talk about God at work. We're not supposed to share our faith. Well, you don't have to just do that through words, right, Vic? I mean, you can do that through the way that you live and your actions, mm-hmm. and the way that you love people and the way that you treat people and the way you exemplify the way you go about doing your work, right? If you're just jumping in the office pool by the water cooler, griping about your boss and griping about all the work and the stuff that you hate to do and everything about your job, you're influencing people to do the same and to sit there and to take on that same identity and idea of work. But if you look at it as a gift and you're going about your job thinking about and expressing, man, what a gift it is to be able to do these things, and somebody's right. looking at you like, you have 5,000 files in your hands. You're going to have to find some way to file today. I know, and through God's grace, I'll be able to do it. And it's good that I have the work. Right, the way we live and that we exemplify our lives is not just when we're at church and not just when we're with our friends, but when we're on our workplaces too. And so when we look at it like that, the way that Christ did, and realize that like God himself did that, not just to do it, but to make an example for us, mm-hmm. that honoring God can be found in the most humble and small acts of work, right? You don't have to be some evangelist or a preacher or somebody that's running a nonprofit somewhere that's changing the world in that way. You and your monotonous and mundane job can be an example and receive that gift of work and use it to glorify God and allow it to change your circumstances in your life the way that Father Chizik did.
Right, and what you're saying is reevaluate what fills you up. You know, yeah. What is it that you do that makes you better? And then change that also to expand into your daily work life.
Yeah.
You know, like if it's like singing a song on the way to work, I mean, I know this is basic stuff, but like I said, anything that like makes you feel good and excited about the day, you know, recite the rosary while you're working at your computer. Yeah. You know, listen to something that kind of, if you're pulling parts, listen to something that like the, you know, lifts you up. You know, but also know that everything you do today is a residual effect for somebody else in the betterment of their lives. So we may not know who we reach out to and help their lives out by our actions. If we're enacted, then therefore we don't change the world.
Right.
So we have to be focused on, you know, what we can do to change the world in our way, and that's being positive, that's being loving, that's being charitable, and that's being merciful in all aspects.
Yeah, and it really changes your frame of mind on everything. I mean, I remember I used to do whatever I could to get out of work. Like, mm-hmm. You know what I mean? I'd fake sick, do this, do that. And I'm talking about when I was a lot younger. But you never realize the burden you put on other people.
Right.
Right. Like my wife works in a vision lab with two or three people. If one of them calls in, I mean, that puts a lot more stress on her and what she's got to do. Or if she calls in, it puts more stress on one of them. It's the same thing when I work for Napa. Like, oh, I'm just not going to show up today to work in my section of the warehouse. Mm-hmm. Well, now somebody's got to be pulled from somewhere else that has no familiarity with what you're doing. And it's going to slow everything down. The trucks are going to get out later. Stores aren't going to get parts. People's cars aren't going to get fixed. All because somebody decided one day that I didn't feel like doing this. Mm-hmm. Right. And so there is a way to find glory in this, to glorify God, I mean by that, and to really be able to help the next person down the line. And that's what it's about. It doesn't have to be a burden when we look for the good in it and we see it as an opportunity to partake in the will of God. That's what returns it to what it was before the garden. Mm-hmm. And that's what Jesus was trying to exemplify in that work in his father's, in Joseph's shop, right? Was this is not beneath you. This is an opportunity to continue to help. How many things did Jesus build with his hands alongside Joseph that helped a family in Nazareth or beyond, right? How many roofs did they help to build? How many, you know, pieces of furniture did they build for people? Mm-hmm. How many wagons did they repair that allowed people to get their goods somewhere else? We'll never know because it doesn't tell us, but I guarantee you it was a lot. And Jesus looked at that probably just as important as he did any other thing that he did to help people, because it was a way to glorify God and to give back through the gifts and talents that he had given him. So there's a couple Bible verses here I want to read as we kind of close out and talk about how-tos here. But one is from Colossians. It's Colossians 3:23. And Paul writes here, whatever your task, put yourselves into it as done for the Lord and not for your masters. So even when you get in those moments, folks, of like, man, I hate this job and I hate my boss and I hate this and I can't stand that person. We all feel that sometimes. We all feel that stress. What he's saying here is don't look at your work as doing it for your masters, because that's what we can do. I don't want to do this. Right. I'm going to do a terrible job, or I'm going to take my time because this guy wants it and I don't like that person. When you do that, you're doing nothing but causing yourself harm. The way you do in that is not get angry at it, but say, Lord, right, you put me here. This is your will. I'm going to do the best I can. And I'm not here serving my boss I don't like. I'm here serving you. And what matters is you've called me to this work and you want me to do it to the best of my ability. And so I will, to honor you. The next verse here, the last one, is Philippians 2:14-15. And it says, do all things without grumbling or disputing, that you may be blameless and innocent children of God without blemish in the midst of a crooked and twisted generation, among whom you shall shine as lights in the world. That alludes back to what I was saying a minute ago. You can go to your job and you can complain and grumble and dispute and all these things it says in the verse and make everybody else's life miserable because your life is miserable. Mm-hmm. Or you can shine as a light in the world, as Paul talks about here, and stands out against this generation of people that choose to do different. Right. It's another way we can live in the will of God and bring people to him. So, you know, I would say here is just some how-tos. Look, start every day off with prayer. Like, if you're really struggling with your job and you're really having a hard time going and you're just depressed and all those things, then take a few minutes and offer it back to God, right? Offer it up. I know that gets thrown around in circles and easily and all that stuff, and it's not so easy in the moment. But even a priest in the midst of a Siberian prison found a way to offer it back to God. And what he found in that was joy. He talks about that in a later chapter where he says, when I started to live and work this way, I found an unending source of joy because it didn't rob me of my peace. It didn't rob me. My circumstances weren't allowed to control me or to deem how who I was going to be that day, because my joy came in understanding this work was a privilege and in a way to glorify God. And folks, if we do that every morning with prayer and we start to say, look, I'm dreading this, I'm dreading that, I'm tired of this paper I've been writing for 2 years, I'm tired of the mundaneness of this, but Lord, it's an opportunity to glorify you through it, then God's strength will become your own, and invite him into it. That's what Father said he did. On the days I was too exhausted, on the days that I wanted to cry and give up, I asked the Lord to do it for me, and he gave me the strength and the will to do it. You're constantly surrendering to God in everything that you do. Offer that up. And in those moments where it's difficult, where you just want to quit or you just want to stop or it's just dragging you down, remember, look at the whole picture of what you're doing. Not that mediocre or mundane task in front of you, but who down the line is going to benefit? How is that task that you can complete, even though you may not want to, even though you don't want to, you don't like it, you hate it, if you complete that task, who's going to be helped, right? A scan at a hospital that helps somebody with cancer or an illness, right? A guy who pulls a part that helps a car get down the road for somebody who really needed it. Somebody that takes the time to work with somebody in need to get them into a home because they're in a terrible situation. You never know what you can do, but you know that God has called you to do that. He's put you in a place where you can look at it in a negative light or a positive light. So you have the choice right now to look at your job in a different way than maybe you have. I know I'm going to look at ministry and everything that God calls me to, whether it's this or something else in 10 years, in that light. And it's a gift to have read this book. For those of you who have not read it, it is called He Leadeth Me. It's by Father Chizik, and it is a phenomenal book. Not only will it help you with the will of God in work, like we talked about today, but in every other aspect of your life. So folks, if you're struggling with work, do the things we talked about here. Go back and listen to this. Pick up this book and read it and start realizing that everything that goes on in our life is an invitation to do the will and live in the will of God. So Victor, let's take it to prayer. In the name of the Father, and the Son, and the Holy Spirit, amen. Heavenly Father, many of us make the mistake of looking at work as a burden or as nothing more than something we have to do to provide for our family. Hating or dreading our jobs is missing the point of why you have given us the gift of them in the first place. Help us to see work as an opportunity to live in your will and to serve others. And Father, whenever we feel our jobs are becoming mundane and burdensome, remind us to offer it up to you the way that your Son did. In the name of the Father, and the Son, and the Holy Spirit, amen.
Thanks for listening to Just a Guy in the Pew. To find out more about John Edwards or have him come to speak to your parish, group, or conference, go to justaguyinthepew.com or send us an email at justaguyinthepew@gmail.com.